Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I have been going to book conferences and book signings for a really long time, and I have had the pleasure of meeting Heather Graham before I even was doing this show. A long time ago, I was a victim advocate for a very small city in Miami, the South Miami Police Department, and I did a fundraiser for victims of domestic violence and had read in the paper that this wonderful writer, Heather Graham, lived very close by. So I wrote to her publisher, Myra Books, and asked if she would come by and at least attend the luncheon. Well, not only did Heather come by and attend the luncheon, she spoke. She had cases of two different books shipped. She did a reading at the local Barnes & Noble, and she bought a bunch of items from our raffle, which tipped our victims fund into an astronomical amount. Since then, I see Heather all the time. She's one of the kindest, most generous people I know. Besides being one of the most prolific writers there is, she's an international best-selling and multiple award-winning author of over 200 books. She also writes under the name Shannon Drake. I'm honored to call her friend, and I'm so happy that, Heather, you're finally here on Authors on the Air, just by yourself and not at a conference. Welcome, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Pam. Thank you so much for that intro, too. That was lovely. Thank you.
You know, it occurs to me that every time we bump into each other, we're really at conferences nowadays since I no longer live in Miami. And I'm always dragging you to a table to do a live show. And because you're kind of the preeminent author on all genres. You write in everything. Suspense, historical romance, vampire fiction, time travel, occult. You write Christmas, you write everything. And what you don't write under your own name, you write under Shannon Drake. I know that you are were originally an actress. That's what you went to school for. I know you love to sing karaoke. I know your family travels with you as an entourage and that you love all the new babies in your family. I also know you love role playing. I know you love Key West and you love swimming with the dolphins and that you're a scuba diver. What don't I know about you that I should know?
Oh, my God. Probably that most of the time I'm a walking disaster. But
not true.
Nope, thank you. Well, no, I was going to say, as far as books, though you, I think you're one of the people who actually got to know my mom. And my mom and dad are,
yes,
were absolutely great. My mother was kind of a... mother was born in Dublin and, you know, brought a lot of things with her and kind of crazy wonderful, but she was kind of like the internet before the internet. She had a million books, and we were encouraged to read everything, which is why I, you know, to this day, I love every genre out there. I will read everything, nonfiction, any type of fiction. You know, I love them all, and so it's, you know, it's very hard for me to settle on one. Therefore, luckily these days, you don't have to.
It's true. It's true. And so I'm curious, you write in every genre there is. Why did you create Shannon Drake?
Well, that was, it's funny, they've now changed the books that were out under Shannon Drake are actually now available under Heather Graham because publishers decided to turn it all into one. When I started it, and I think for people starting out now, or, you know, for people in the middle of their careers now, the intelligent reason to have a pseudonym is when you're doing something different, because mm-hmm. not everybody does like everything. So when I was doing it, I had been writing contemporary and historical. So originally
right.
historical went under Shannon Drake. But then I wound up doing vampires and they wound up under Shannon Drake too. So you may love vampires and not be a keen fan of history, or you may love history and have no interest in vampires. So that didn't really work out the way it was intended to. But to me, I mean, you know, if I could go back and try to do everything much better, always make sure that a pseudonym was for one particular genre, because the thing I really hate to do and that I think hurts us is to put a book out there and have a reader fooled, thinking it's something that they not, you know, and then they pick it up and pay for it, and then they're angry at you because none of us want to pay for something we don't want. So,
right.
In other words,
you're reading in a genre you're not typically used to reading in. Is that what you mean?
Right. And fine. And some people, you know, I mean, some people may enjoy it, but I have friends who they like contemporary and they're just totally bored by anything that's historical. So they don't want to read a historical novel or historical romance or anything of that type. But they love, say they love the occult, they love paranormal, and they're happy to read a vampire or a ghost or, you know, werewolf or shapeshifter or any other thing
sure.
you might come up with. So I just, to me, and something that I try for, you know, is to make sure people know what they're getting. Because, you know, none of us like to pick up something we don't want, you know, whatever it is. So.
Interesting you should say that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say because naturally people reprint things or publishers reprint things. And that always scares me. I really want people to, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I read that 15 years ago. I read it 10 years ago or whatever. And it's like, oh, I'd like to read it again. Then that's fine. But, you know, I don't want somebody to pick something like, oh my God, I already read this. I could have bought a new book, you know? So I don't always succeed, but I certainly try to make sure something's coming out again that people know that it was published before.
And it has a new cover, maybe, and that's the reason
right.
you're
mm-hmm.
updating your book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting you say about people reading historical and then contemporary. I am not a fan of historical. I'm not sure why it is, except if it's about vampires, you know, who are bringing their story from the past forward. And then I don't mind reading that, but for all intents and purposes, I can't do war stories, and I'm not a gothic romance reader at all. But having said that, I like all of your other books. I love them. And whether
oh,
it's the
you.
Suspense book or it's paranormal or romance, I like all of those books very much. And I'm often wonder, you know, why. Well, now you're at a point where everybody knows who you are, and you are Shannon Drake. So I think that after 200 books, you would think that someone would say, oh, I don't have to worry about Heather. I'll know to read the synopsis, right? I'll read the synopsis and then check it out. With all the things that you do, and we talked a little bit about this in the green room, however in the world do you find time to put out like 5 or 6 or 7 books a year? I just don't understand it. It seems almost impossible to me, not only just the act of writing, but to come up with so many interesting and different storylines and titles. Is there a secret you've learned, Heather, since you started?
Well, I would say for one, I don't always come up with my own titles. I'll put something on it and then the company will say, it's not going to work. And then they'll give me a list and I can play with the list. And I mean, it's not like they say, oh, it must be this. They never do that. They're very good about it. But, you know, sometimes you have the situation where we can't do this. We have another one coming out this month already, you know, with the same title or similar title, or the sales mm-hmm. department doesn't feel that it really is indicative of the book. So I thank God for that, because titles to me are incredibly hard. I think one of them is, you know, I'll look at things like, oh my God, that needs to be cleaned out. And it's kind of like, that seems overwhelming to me. So it's like, oh no, I need to write instead. So that helps a lot. The fact that I really don't do too much else well at all, it helps a lot to convince me that I need to sit down and work. I'm just one of those incredibly lucky human beings. I'm amazingly grateful that I get to do this for a living. And then I think for one, living in Florida all my life, I think we are a state that tends to have a lot of ridiculous things happen, and
yes.
therefore there are more things to pick up on.
So.
But anywhere you go, you're always going to find a unique story that, you know, is to a certain place. Although, I mean, I will admit there are places that I do love and tend to use more than others. So that part's true too. But any place you go is going to have a great story.
Really?
Truth is always going to be stranger than fiction.
Well, yeah, and you're right. Living in Miami particularly, you know, we were no shortage of weird stuff going on there. So, I'm reading through as fast as I can your book list. A lot of your titles are from a series. So, The Crew Hunters, you know, is one particularly, and that Pale as Death, I think, is part of Crew of Hunters, right?
Yes, it is.
How do you keep track of a series that is really growing and growing? Because that just released August 1st. I know Echoes of Evil just released on September 18th, but which is something else. Do you have to keep a Bible of characters?
Yeah. I do. I always have a, I have.
I can't imagine
also,
that.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I do. It's a funny thing. I think outlines and synopsises are probably harder to write than actual books, because once you're into the book, you kind of know what you're doing and you go with it. But, and I know that one of our discussions at conferences a lot are, you know, do you write by the seat of the pants? Are you a pantser? Or are you, you know, are you one of those people who does a detailed outline? I always have a synopsis and the characters, because it is very hard to keep track of characters. And you really do your best to make sure you're not messing characters up. But I did learn early on in my career, the reason I learned to write a synopsis is I found out that when you're under contract, they'll give you money for one. And, you know, when you have five children growing up in the house, you definitely are working towards that goal. But I found out once I had gotten into doing them, I love having a synopsis. It doesn't mean you're going to go with it, but it does mean that you always have somewhere to go. I've had synopsises where I've changed many times, but at least when I started to work, I always had, oh, okay, this is what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. Or the other thing, too, is that one of the things that I always like to have in a book is you want to wonder, especially, say, in a mystery or a crime novel, you want to know who the killer is, but you also don't want Harry to suddenly walk in, in chapter 20 and be the killer. You know, you want to be able to track through and know that they could be all the way. And I think synopsises often help with that, you know, so that you make sure that you have all your possible suspects, but that when you come up with the one that hopefully nobody knew, it's still plausible. You know, you're not going, huh?
Yes.
Who's he? You know, you don't want to be doing that either. So. Yeah, I find synopsis helps me a lot.
I understand what you're saying, because all of a sudden, you know, yes, there are red herrings throughout the book, and all of a sudden the killer turns out to be somebody you've heard nothing about or relatively little about in a story, and it kind of is frustrating. I like there to have multiples, you know, or
– Right.
I mean, I like those. When you write, is it – when you are writing multiple characters like that or multiple suspects, do you prefer writing from third person? Do you prefer writing from first person? What works for you, or do they all work?
I think I am one of those people who tend to prefer third person. It doesn't mean I won't enjoy a good book written in first person, but most of the time I prefer third person. For one, if you're only in one mind, you can't really see, you know, what a couple of people are thinking or seeing. It kind of limits what you're able to do sometimes. Depending on the book, like I said, some of them are written where first person is important and it works. But I would say, in general, I do prefer third. But, you know, it's kind of like I remember one time thinking, if I didn't like a certain genre, it would probably be sci-fi. And then it's like, oh, wait, that's not true at all. I love a lot of sci-fi. So it's kind of like if it's a good book, I'm going to love it, whatever it is.
Yeah, um, I the ones that I cannot, I have a really hard time reading, and I do read, is if it's first person present tense. It's a very
confusing.
Oh, that
makes me insane. You mean as in I put the thing on the table? Yeah. That drives me crazy.
Yes. Yeah, I have a really hard time with that. I think it's harder to read. And I wonder, you know, how the average reader feels about that. Now, I read a lot of books every year. I read 400 books a year. So, you know, for me, that slows down my reading process. And that alone is irritating because I want to read as many books as I can. But
I think it irritates me because it's in a book and you're telling me about it. So obviously you already did it. You know, so it does drive me crazy. But I understand it is a very popular concept of writing these days. Like I said, so I mean, some people will love it. And then, yes, in my case, it drives me absolutely crazy because I keep wanting to say, no, you already did it. So it's past tense. But,
right. So Heather, one of the things I always like to ask writers is if you ever read your dialogue out loud, or does someone read your dialogue out loud to you? Are you to the point where you know your characters so well that their speech patterns and intonation and timbre and tone are pretty well established in your mind?
I think things are established in my mind. I have to say, I mean, every once in a while, I'm sure I do things out loud, but most of the time, I think, you know, it's even like because I've wondered about it, I thought, you know, that one of these days I might want to try Dragon, but I am so accustomed to hearing and seeing. I mean, for one, you're seeing everything play out in your own mind.
Sure.
So, you know, obviously I can't make my characters real in front of me. I think for me, I don't do it out loud that often, but in fact, it's funny, I'll listen to a few lines of an audio book, but only a few lines, because, well, for one, I don't want to waste my time. I already know how the book ends. And for another, I'm kind of like you. I constantly have a book going, so I want to be reading or listening to someone else's book.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you happy with the way your audiobooks come out?
Yes, I am given, I'm always given a couple of readers to choose from. I would say I'm pretty happy. One day, if I ever had the time, which I'm not foreseeing, I would love to do one myself.
Oh, wow. Oh, that would be interesting.
Some people say they come out terribly, so I don't know.
Well, I've heard both sides, so, you know, I don't know. However, which brings me to another point. When you do book signings, do you ever read from your book?
Yes, I have.
I find that fascinating because and I never realized it until I was listening to Bob Crace read up at Murder by the Beach. He was reading an Elvis and Joe book, and I'm always surprised to hear the author's own storytelling voice of his characters, because sometimes I get it right or sometimes I get it so wrong. And it's really interesting to me that some writers do not like to read from their books. I find it fascinating. I love to know how a character sound in the writer's voice.
I enjoy reading when I'm at a signing and asked to read. I enjoy it. I have actually, to be honest, I haven't been at any of those in a while because usually we're on panels and obviously on a panel, very seldom are you going to have people sit there and read, which of course sometimes we do things called coffee clutches where people do read, but I actually haven't done one in a while. I think it's good when you have the opportunity to do it because obviously you have a certain way you're thinking or feeling. But it's also, you know, it's kind of like I've been to, my husband and I can argue over movies a lot. My favorite is when he tells me, oh, well, you didn't understand it. You know, you didn't understand the deep meaning. Well, frankly, I don't want to be so confused that I don't understand it. You know, I want
right.
something out there that I'm going to get.
Right.
So, but I mean, we're always going to, you know, probably always going to disagree on movies. So, which is certainly
That's
good. You know, I mean, it's natural that we all disagree on stuff. So
sure,
I don't mind that at all.
Does
but
Dennis
again,
read your books, by the way?
Dennis, actually not very often, but let's see. It's funny because I know the kids when they were growing up, they you know, because when they were in high school, it's kind of like, no, you're not old enough to read these yet. Well, I mean, high school, certainly all their friends were. I remember when Jason was in high school, because they kind of didn't think anything of it. You know, I started when the kids were, I started trying to write, I shouldn't say writing, when the third child was born and was actually got my advance in time to pay the hospital for the fourth child. So they were all very little when I started out, and they never thought anything of it. In fact, I think Derek went to school one day and had no idea what I did, and they asked him, you know, what your parents did for a living, and he said, I think my mother types at home because no one will give her a job.
You type at home?
So,
is that what he said? That's funny.
Yes.
How cute. How cute.
But that's, I mean, they're just so used to it. But they, the oldest one time he came home and he was all excited about what I did because apparently a lot of his friends, his female friends in high school thought that he would be a great person to talk to all the time because he was my son. But, well, that helped him out anyway.
That's so sweet.
But
that's so
yeah,
sweet.
So it depends on what the subject matter is. If I'm doing something, especially because the same thing when they were little, my husband's family, he has a huge family. Both parents were Italian, and he had a lot of really, really wonderful family I adore up in Massachusetts. And we would take the kids up and down the coast every year to spend some time up in Massachusetts during the summer and then come back. And along the way, with five children, you try to find activities. So we went to and tons of museums, churches, and battle reenactments. So when I've done something that has to do with the Revolution, the Civil War, they will always, you know, want to read something like that. But I think that you know, it depends on what the book is, whether they're going to read it or not. I think Jason's,
I know that Jason's, you travel with your kids a lot, right?
A lot, yeah.
They're,
I mean, they're adults
they're
now.
They're your entourage. I mean...
Yeah, they're great. We do because we do theatrical events. We always did a vampire party with the dinner theater at RT, and
right.
We always do one at Writers for New Orleans. And I had them. It's one of my favorite pictures of my sons. I had one of them. The oldest was dressed up as Grant, and the second one was the Southern Cavalry Commander Stewart, and then one with Custer. And I've got a great picture of them that looks like they really could have gone back. So they're helpful. They're wonderful. And now that they've grown up, they've also, one of them has a friend who's a U.S. Marshal. So he took me to the Marshal's office in Key West. And, you know, they provide all kinds of great things for you now too, that they're adults. So they wind up being very helpful most of the time.
Oh, that's great.
The
do they
yeah.
know how famous you are in literary circles?
Well, I to be quite honest, I don't think, you know, I mean, it's a funny thing. You need, I think, I could be wrong on my numbers, but I know I'm close. You need something like 50,000 hardcovers to be 10 New York Times, and probably the worst movie known to man is seen by, you know, 1 to 2 million people. So I don't think, unless you are Patterson or King or someone like that, that authors are really, you know, quote unquote, famous. I think they respect it. They love a lot of my friends. I think the best thing I ever did for my kids was Bob Stein is an amazing guy and a friend. And so they've all gotten to meet Stein. And
right.
I remember my entire family, we all read The Tomb and The Keep and a number of F. Paul Wilson books. The first time I met Paul was years and years ago when he was actually, we were doing Writers at Sea, and he had an autographing table next to mine. And my entire family sat by my table, just all grouped together, staring at his wide-eyed, waiting for him to come. So,
and he's such a nice fellow, too, so.
Oh, yeah, he's a doll.
He's such
Paul's
a nice
doll.
Fellow.
Yeah, such a doll and such a fine writer. He's just a great guy, and he's also our drummer. He's a drummer for the Slush Pile Band.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
super
explain
guys.
That to everybody so everybody knows exactly what you're talking about, because this is just another part of you that a lot of listeners don't know because they don't get to go to the conferences and see you. So tell everybody about the band.
Well, we have the Slush Pile Band, which loosely consists of whoever happens to be at an event at the time. But an awful lot of the time, like I was saying, F. Paul Wilson is the drummer. Blake Crouch has drummed with us. And we've had a number of the author Daniel Palmer, who also has a wonderful book right now, is very talented. He plays harmonica, guitar, sings. Let's see.
Danny's
great. There's all kinds of, And then we had a really cute time at BoucherCon in New Orleans because Alexandra Sokolov is now living in Scotland. She married a very handsome Scot named Craig Robertson, who's also an author.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And they came over with their group from England, and we had a super time. Her little group, I mean, from the British Isles, her little group did the Jailhouse song from Chicago. I did Mama Morton's song, and China did all that jazz. So it's loosely depending on who is there, you know, who's in the band. But there's a group, of course, that you know, gets together every time. It's a tremendous amount of fun because you wouldn't believe how many authors came out of theater or music. And so, Don Bruins. Don Bruins is a wonderful performer, too.
He is. John Lesquois is too. He has albums.
Yes, John Lesquois. Yes.
Are you
going to
do anything
with John? I've got an album out there.
I know.
John and I are currently co-president of Thriller Writers. I love John. He's an amazing guy. And again,
really
very talented. Yeah, a lot of it came from the first year that we had Thriller, we had the Killer Thriller Band. And that's where I met Alex Sokoloff and Harley Jane Kozak and Daniel, and actually his dad,
his
first
dad,
couple
Michael.
Thriller things. I did something with his dad, Michael Palmer, who of course, you know, we've lost, but Daniel is continuing as an amazing author on his own and as an amazing musician.
Yeah, I've learned not to be surprised now about all the writers that I've met who are also musicians. It just seems to me that, I mean, I think your first love was theater and all. But if you're creative, if you are a creative person, it just seems to make sense that writing isn't your only outlet, that you do something else too. And I find that across the board, that creative people have other creative pursuits besides just writing, which is wonderful. You know, I can't write anything, but I love, I can't really to get an email. No. It doesn't even feel natural to me. You know, writing an email is distressing enough, but I am a musician. I'm a musician and I love art and I love to create wonderful meals and all. So, you know, in my own right, I guess that's my creative outlook, but you know, my, or whatever, but not like you, Heather. Just I am not like you.
I just always I don't know. It's like I was saying, when it comes to so many things, I will wind up writing because I know that I'm going to be inept if I try to do them anyway. So that's one of the things that has been great for me. And then again, just because I love people and I love places. So you're always, this is one of my favorites, one that I got to do for something that I was working on. My kids have a friend who is what they call a fabricator. And she works for Legacy Studios, which used to be the Stan Winston Studios. And she took me through, and it was like the most amazing place in the world, because you have something like the Geico pig next to the most ripped up vampire or zombie you ever want to see. And these things are they just create these amazing things. And one of her jobs is to dress Robert Downey Jr. when he's Iron Man. And, you know, it's a terrible job, but someone has to do it, you know, but,
right.
I mean, there's so many fascinating people and things that they do in places. I don't think it's possible to. I really don't think it's possible to run out.
Well, I have seen a lot of your photos from when you're – Key West is a great place to go. If you're gonna be in costume or role-playing and all, and I have seen your – I think I've seen your whole family in their pirate attire. And, of course
yep.
Tons of fun. And I don't know, do they still do the big party on Halloween down in Key West? I don't even know if they still do it.
They do. Yeah, no,
Fantasy
they do.
Fest.
Are you kidding? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Halloween. Oh,
yeah.
Fantasy Fest, definitely. There are so many wonderful. I mean, Key West is, it's funny, two of my favorite places are New Orleans and Key West, and they're very alike
right.
in many ways. They have,
yes, they are.
You know, they have amazing history. One thing I think that people miss about both of them sometimes, because they are so well known as party places, is that there's just incredible architecture, the cemeteries, the museums.
Yes.
Both of them are wonderful in that. You know, I mean, there's nothing, you know, it's so much fun for an author to, you know, get to go through the Hemingway house and try to suck in some Hemingway and see the six
right.
stage cats and everything.
Right, right.
So, yeah, definitely. Key West has been featured many times by me, and then New Orleans, of course, too, because I do love them. But then again, like I was saying, there's just, I don't think I've ever been anywhere where you didn't find, you know, a really fascinating story to play off of. Because,
oh,
again, there's nothing like people, and people, of course, always took place in history.
Let's take a few minutes about Echoes of Evil, because, you know, I do want to promote your book, and we haven't even had a chance to talk about that.
Okay.
But Echoes of Evil just released on the 18th of September. Already the reviews are pouring in for it being a fabulous book. This is Crew of Hunters books. Will you tell everybody a little bit about this particular book? And do you recall even which book this is in the series?
I'm not sure of the number. Lately in the last several years, there have been three each summer. And each summer they're connected in some way.
So is this number 26? Does that sound right?
It could be. I'm really
yeah.
not sure. They started with Phantom Evil. I'm not sure what year that was. But it's the everyone involved. Every book stands by itself. But they're
yes.
all connected to something called Crew of Hunters, which is they are a unit of the FBI, which is something I truly think thrillers writers for, because every year when we would go up for the conference, we would get to spend a day with the New York City offices of the FBI. And so since mine is a special unit where people are, you know, asked to join specifically, because if you belong to the Crew of Hunters, you are one of those people who have been either gifted or cursed to be able to see the dead. So that's what connects them all. This summer, the three books were connected by the fact that the three protagonists are brothers, and they really had no idea that they had this gift or curse until their parents, who were actors, were killed together in a theater accident. And to their surprise, their mother, who is quite the diva, you know, comes back to haunt them and tell them what they should have been doing, along with their ever-patient father. But really have so much to do with this particular book, because this one goes to the youngest brother. He's in the Keys diving with a friend. There's just been a recent discovery of a historic ship, and they're down in the ship and find a man who obviously didn't die back then, because his corpse is very fresh. So they find him. And then it also connects to, I'll be honest, this one came about because a friend of mine who is a musician down there, he walked up to me one day and said, I must have a book in which I get to be a prolific ghost. I mean, not prolific.
That's funny.
I'm sorry. He's a, oh my God, I just completely lost the word.
A resident ghost?
Well, he wants to be a philandering ghost.
Ah,
he wants to. he's very cute. He's a wonderful guy. I love to go see him entertaining when I'm down there. And so that's actually kind of how this one came about being. And then again, also, I just love Key West. And so getting anything in Key West is a lot of fun to do.
Absolutely. Tell everybody where they can find you on the web, please, Heather. If you know, it shouldn't be hard. You're everywhere, but will you please give a best place for you?
Well, my best place is I am at theoriginalheathergraham.com because sadly I'm a few years older than the other Heather Graham, and we were both born Heather Graham, so yeah. I am the original Heather Graham. And then I have a Facebook page, and sad to say, I really don't tweet. I don't know why I never got going on tweeting. So I think I have Twitter, but sad to say, I don't do it very often. And I'm trying to convince myself to get back into Snapchat because that's fun, but I just haven't yet. So mostly I would say, or the best place I would say, is theoriginalheathergraham.com or on Facebook.
Very good. I am so happy and so honored and so blessed that you came on the show today. And, you know, I've treasured our friendship for all these years. And
thank you. Me too.
Thank you. And I look forward to seeing you, I don't know, the next conference that comes around. I don't even know what's coming
well,
up.
Well, we know we'll both be at VoucherCon.
We know that.
I'll be around
I'm
at something at the book fair this year. I'm not sure what that is yet.
I'll see you
at
the book fair then.
Miami-Dade book fair.
I'll be at the book fair. I'm going to be at Sanibel Writers Conference, although I feel sorry for everybody coming over here to Sanibel with all of our, water issues.
Oh, God, I've seen it. I'm so sad.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully something good will happen. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if anybody really takes an interest. Heather Graham,
well,
you're the best, and I love you, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and thank you so much for what you do for all of us. Totally appreciate it, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we'll talk again soon, yeah?
Okay, all right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Heather. Have a great afternoon. Bye-bye.
You too.
And that's our show for today. Man, what a great show. Thank you so much for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Bye, everyone.